This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week number 704, brought to you by Eero. Go to Eero.com/iFanboy and enter code iFanboy at checkout to get free overnight shipping with your order and iFanboy listeners just like you. iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 704. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello, Josh, and everyone.
Who's on location. But that's all you get to know about it. He's on location.
Sometimes you carefully plan a show from a production standpoint, a complicated show, and nothing goes right. And you end up doing it remotely, and that's the way it goes.
Technically, everyone's always on location.
That's true. But no one else needs to know the headaches we've gone through today.
I don't need to get nothing
compared to people who are dealing with fires and things, but still, it was a pain in the butt.
We are iFanboy, and every week, this is a huge pain in the ass when we read our sack of comics and pick our favorite book and call that the pain in the ass of the week. Pick of the week. We talk about that book. We talk about other comics from the week. We will talk about the patron pick. And we are going to be skipping listener mail this week because there's many, many things to talk about. It was difficult to winnow them down, even though not a very large week, but plenty to talk about, I noticed.
Yeah.
Your spoiler warning is that there will be spoilers about the books that we're going to talk about because, duh, this is a review show. That's how it works. You don't want to know about what's happening. Come back after you've read them. Connor, you had the pick.
I don't think it was a surprise. It's Batman Universe number 4. This is the third out of four books that's been pick of the week. It's only a 6-issue miniseries and it's 2/3 over, but it's my favorite book out right now. And I had a sneaking suspicion when I looked at my list this week, because at the end of the last issue was when Batman and Hal Jordan were transported via magical Fabergé egg to the Old West and met Jonah Hex. So this was going to be the Jonah Hex team-up issue. And I figured, considering he is one of mine and your favorite characters, that this had a good chance. And it paid off really well. I had everything I wanted out of this three-way team-up in the Old West, in which Batman and Hal Jordan have to convince Jonah Hex of their mission, and Jonah Hex encounters technologies and super suits and supervillains and superpowers, and all drawn beautifully by Nick Darrington, who can draw the hell out of Old West clothing and guns and horses, and a beautiful fight scene in the middle, silent fight scene with 3, 6, 9, 12 panels per page. This book just continues to impress. We've been talking a lot about DC. There's been a lot of DC picks, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Bendis has really invigorated a whole section of the universe here. And there's a lot of stagnation in comics right now, creatively, I think. But his move over to DC has paid off in spades, and I know people are sick of us talking about him, but the fact of the matter is there's no corner of comics that I'm more excited to read every week right now than the Bendis corner, which includes all kinds of different books. We're going to talk about a bunch of them today. It's just a lot of fun.
I think you're right. I think you're very right. I think you were very right to point out that two-page, 12-panel sequence.
Yep.
That was sort of the highlight of the whole thing for me. I love it when that happens. And I also think, like, I bet artists like that. That's like, this is when you really get to do the thing. You know, like, that's the work of comics, is sort of that kind of storytelling. Unless you're a splash page person, in which case, you're probably worthless.
And especially in a Bendis book, in which the words are the star a lot of the times. This is
Yeah, that's a good point.
This is, you know, all storytelling.
Well, and also, you know, him being you know, I don't even know if people remember, but he was an artist. He was originally, you know, writer artist. In fact, the only reason he was writing was to get his stories so he could draw some stuff to tell his stories. And it turned out that that was the thing he had a better aptitude in. But he has always had an appreciation for comic book art as a thing. So it's not surprising, but I also see what you mean. I don't know if this is valid, but there was a bit in here. There's one thing I did not like in this book. It's a little tiny moment. Do you know what it is?
I know there's been moments throughout this week's of comics that we're going to talk about.
There's one bit.
There's one bit I didn't like. I wonder if it's the same bit. You tell me what yours was.
Asking for a friend?
That was the wrong choice.
I was like, what the fuck is that? The line before it was funny.
Yeah.
But also, I did have a recurring sort of feeling of like, this isn't what Jonah Hex sounds like. But I know that that's not, you know, valid necessarily. There was a little bit of, because to me, that Jimmy Palmiotti, Justin Gray, you know, sort of taciturn Jonah Hex is the one in my mind. So I was like, this guy's awfully chatty. Now, it's not necessarily wrong, but it took me a little bit to get in the headspace of it. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to accept it. And then he said, asking for a friend. I was like, no, no.
Yeah, that was the one. And you're right. I mean, if you take that, if you cut that line, it's still a funny panel.
Yeah.
When he asked, is that witchcraft?
That's a great line.
Yeah, that one I winced at, but kept going.
I think I mentioned this last week on some book, but what was the one that I can't remember? But it was something where I was like, he's starting. Maybe this is when I was talking about Jimmy Olsen actually last time, where Fraction was starting to feel his oats and just letting it fly. And I feel like there was a little bit of that in this one. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, I'm just going to have fun with it, which is okay. But there's a sort of razor edge line, I think, that can sometimes just. It doesn't even have to be bad. Once something stands out to you like that for a second, it just takes you out of it for a second, or it does me. That's sort of a thing.
Yeah, I think I give Bendis rope because he's always been that way. You know, the joke was that every character spoke Yiddish, no matter if they were Jewish or not, that he writes, and that's his thing. And so you kind of have to roll with it.
But one of the things that I had really liked about all of the DC stuff so far is that he'd sort of reined that into a like he dialed the Bendis down from 8 to 6, you know, and I thought that was really good, did a service for his work. And listen, you're listening to this. I am talking about a minuscule thing. I enjoyed the issue. I don't know that I would have made a pick of the week, but I absolutely understand what it was. I want to watch Hal Jordan and Bruce walk out of the store with their new clothes as often as possible. I don't know why they had this. I thought they were going to give him some dirty Western clothes, and they come out in the Marty McFly Back to the Future 3 outfits.
It's not quite the rhinestone stuff, but
no.
He is lucky they had a green vest and
boots and bow tie.
Yeah. As we said before, this is a reprint of the Walmart stuff, so it's been out for a while. I don't know what Nick Darrington's working on right now currently, but it should be high profile. If it's not, I hope it's his choice, because he should be on a major DC book. You know, we talked about this with many people, you know, like Tom Taylor. They've got a lot of talent now at the edges, and they should be using them. And I realize that perhaps our aesthetic is different than the people in charge of DCs right now.
This is a very strong point. And perhaps even that of the general buying public.
Yeah, but even more so, I think, with the people in charge of DC, what they want their comics to look and sound like is not necessarily what we like. But they're in charge, and we just talk about
also,
it.
Also, I mean, Dave Stewart does not hurt this in one single bit. It's funny because I feel like he used to be maybe a little more ubiquitous than he is now. And now when I see him, it's like, oh, you know, it's the moment.
Well, you were reading more Dark Horse.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But even so, like, this color palette that is in here is not the kind of thing you would see in, like, a Hellboy universe book. This is a color palette that reminds me of New Frontier.
Yeah, this is totally his New Frontier color palette. His superhero.
Or even when Darwin did issues of Jonah Hex, Stewart colored it, I believe.
Yes.
So that sort of brings it right back in there, too. I really like Vandal Savage in these issues, too. And I just wanted to bring that up. I liked the bit in the past where we weren't really sure where everybody was in time, and they were trying to figure out the mystery of, like, does he know who Bruce Wayne is, or just know who Batman is? And then the sort of surprise at the end, you know, the twist that happens right at the very end bit, I thought was fantastic, too. I was really applauding.
Batman's been chasing this Fabergé egg that's got these powers that we don't understand. They send him around time and space, and they make you kind of dumb around it. And so in the last issue, he and Hal got transported to the Old West, and here they have to enlist Jonah Hex to help them find the egg, and they encounter Vandal Savage and his ninjas, and there's a giant Old West ninja fight. And then, of course, get zapped back into the present day at the end, although not before Vandal Savage shoots and kills Bruce Wayne. So it may be over. This may be it. This may be a big issue that no one's talking about, the death of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I would call a rollicking good time.
You know,
it's like, it reminds me a lot of Avengers Forever that we really enjoyed way back in the old days, which was sort of like a time travel story where just you take some heroes and you bounce them around, and every other issue they have, where am I? And they have to figure it out and get to the next thing. It's just a lot of fun. And Nick Darrington, I can't say enough good things about him. He's a terrific storyteller. His character work is great. It's a beautiful book. It's a really beautiful book. The one thing we've always talked about Bendis is that he's got a great artist with him. I mean, he has a great eye for art. And that goes to the next book, Superman 16, which he brings over his Marvel collaborator, David LaFuente, who did Ultimate Spider-Man, to draw the sort of goodbye of John and Damian, as John tells Damian he's going to go live in the future. And so they have a night out on patrol together. I like this issue a lot, too. I could have made this the pick, but I just couldn't bring myself to make a Damian book the pick.
Well, that's interesting. I think I might have made this the pick. I think there's one other book that I was pretty sure would have been for me. But I liked the crap out of this. And the whole time I was thinking, is this the best Damian story I've ever read outside of Batman and Robin 1 through 3?
It could be.
I'm pretty sure it is. And, you know, unlike before when I was complaining about how Jonah Hex was written, he wasn't written like Damian had been written in the past. He's much more kid-like.
Yes.
I guess, but it worked really well. You know, Bendis is we've seen his whole career as he was like a single dude to a guy with kids to the guy now. And like, there's such a heart in this stuff that did not used to be there. The hugging specifically, there's a lot of hugging in the books now. And there's definitely like, I mean, I could be reading into it, but I'm seeing a very parental viewpoint, especially with these sort of,
The bits with
Superman and John. But I thought it was really sweet. I thought it was really nice character work. I really like how Damian was drawn through the whole thing, except he has shoelaces, which is stupid.
That's his costume, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's a bit where he flies off with Saturn Girl. He says, "I love you, Dad," and then Superman says, "I love you more," and he goes, "That's completely impossible." And then the panel after that is just Superman sort of standing there looking forlorn. That made me all misty. Like, I was like, oh my God, that was sweet. Like, it really... Like that, I didn't expect it either. Like, I had a genuine emotional reaction to that stuff. It was a really good issue, you know? And man, LaFuente, just killing it.
It's funny because in other books, they've been trending Damian older. Mm-hmm. You know, especially in the Batman books, it's been like he's aged a little bit. And they put him around like 16 or something. And here, I know they're trying to contrast him with John because the whole thing is John came back from space and he's aged and Damian is still younger, and so they make him Damian smaller and act a little younger, but just it's funny, it's not quite what he's doing in the Batman books, but it didn't matter because the contrast was great. The fact that he's so much smaller than John is funny, and Damian's like, let's buy beer. It's like, we don't drink. It's like, well, but we should do something.
Yeah.
It was funny.
And I liked that as just an idea, like a character idea of the fact that like he puts up a huge front with everybody, but when he's with this character, for some reason, he lets it go and he just acts like a kid. So that is at the same time, you know, along with the idea that, you know, this Damian, and in other books too, I've seen this. If nothing else, he seems formidable. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about the idea that for a long time you had Batman who was sort of grim and you needed Dick Grayson or Tim to contrast that.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's almost the other way. Like Batman has been opened up a little more. And so the contrast goes the other way. Like Batman's accepted that he has this family, that you know that he cares about everybody, and this Damian's trying to be gruff and grim and whatever, but really just wants attention and needs to be loved and whatever. And I actually think that works pretty well as a concept, and I don't think everybody can do it. It's hard to write an annoying kid who's endearing, I think.
Right, for sure.
So maybe that's the thing. It was good. That's my point.
If you think too hard about it, I mean, you tell me. Lois and Superman are being very blasé about their son coming back and then immediately leaving to go live in the future. I mean, I get it. The metaphor is sort of like him going to college, but they haven't gotten 18 years with him. He was a kid and he was gone. He came back and a day later he's being sent off for the future. So I think the only thing is they seem sort of cool about it, which I think maybe Parent wouldn't, but you would be a better person to tell that than I would. Then again, he's Superman, and maybe he realizes, you know, his moral compass is a little bit higher than...
Not only that, but, you know, his kid's invulnerable.
Right. Well, I don't even mean worried about him so much as just like, I miss my kid, you know?
Yeah, well, but I mean...
They've got a super phone that works across time, apparently, so...
That helps.
That does help.
And, you know, I like the, well, would you do this?
Yeah,
I would. You know, and there, right there's a whole answer there. I think that's a really nice justification.
Yeah, I love that Damian wants to go. And I was all for it. Bring him to the future. Take him away. He wants to go live in the future and be the Batman of the Legion of Superheroes. Let him do it. So let's talk about Event Leviathan number 5. This is the third Bendis book of the week. And this is the 5th of the 6 issues of The Mystery. And, man, I was really hoping we'd get a reveal here because I think he's doing a really good job of pacing this in thriller-like fashion where this was a sort of a breakneck issue in which things were happening very quickly. Reveals were – in the classic mystery style, there's always a fake reveal before the real reveal. So here they think they figured it out and that Leviathan is Sam Lane, but it's not. There's always the fake reveal right before.
I found that sequence, pretty much everything from the first part of the book, to be really kind of hard to hold on to. I was very sort of confused about where it was going. There's a lot of broken dialogue. There was a lot of, I just couldn't tell where Lois was coming from. Mm-hmm. And I also didn't understand, like, she was saying, like, hey, Smallville, she's trying to talk to him, which is awesome. I like how she does that. It's her cell phone. She doesn't need one. She just says it and he can hear her.
Right.
But I was like, don't they not know who he is? And isn't she being sort of cavalier with that? Then there's another bit in here.
There was another comic this week where somebody very casually said, oh, but Bruce Wayne bought all this stuff. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, no, but I think, is it in this one with the car? And he's like, it's my car. Because she, remember, she took his $3 million vehicle or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And then you find out that Batman has been listening to it through that. And then Batman says, it's my money, so I get to do that. But I was like, no, it's Bruce Wayne's car. That's what we knew from before. It's not Batman's car. And none of these people know who Batman is, especially not Harvey Bullock.
Yeah.
That was weird.
There's a lot of cavalierness these days about the secret identities, for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, the point being, like, up through about the middle of this book, I was like, I'm really not digging this because I don't think it's very well done. Something happened where somebody broke in and shot at Plastic Sam. Man.
No, they were in the hospital. They shot at Sam Lane, and that's where all the dark detectives were.
Right, I know. But so then you had, like, he says, is it Elongated Man?
Yeah.
Says, everybody back, and then Sam yells, back, you rubber band.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this doesn't... And then Zatanna, is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. Says, you know, get us back to Gotham. And then there's like a shot, and I just... And then Superman has Plastic Man, he's somewhere else. Like, it's just...
Well, because this is Plastic Man and Elongated Man. They're two.
Yeah, I think that might have been what my problem was there. But still, that sequence, I was very unclear what was happening. I read it a bunch of times. And it looked real good.
They were questioning Sam Lane in the hospital. The assassin showed up and started shooting, and Sam shot back, and then Zatanna zapped them all away.
Okay.
To me, the biggest problem, it's not even as big a problem, I assume, to you, is that this is a terrible Constantine.
Oh, my God. I forgot about
it. Not just the dialogue, which is what it is, but he's wearing a black suit. He's got like a goatee without the mustache.
It was unclear who it was a bunch of times.
They called him by name here. That's
right.
The reason I knew who.
Yeah, I know. But then, like, he'd come back, and I was like, "Who the hell is this guy talking?" I was like, "Oh, that's supposed to be Constantine again. That's terrible." No, it was. Yeah, I sent you a text, and I was like, "Man, this is not allowed to write Constantine." Period. Yeah, no, you're totally right. It's not. It's.
I don't know why they put him in a black suit and black jacket.
He doesn't wear it. Yeah, no,
it's just
you're
weird.
Right.
No tie. Oh, he doesn't always wear a tie.
No, he wears the tie. Like, that's. Because he's just a blonde white guy, he doesn't get a superhero suit, but he gets his costume.
Right.
So you know what you're talking about. And he doesn't say bloody every third word. Oh, so, and I was like, oh, wow, he's really good with the dialogue as long as it's Americans. Because that was terrible.
Yeah. I mean, at one point somebody called him Sting, and that was funny because he was modeled after Sting.
That's fair.
But other than that, it was just like, oof, this is not a good version of Constantine.
Good Zatanna. I liked Zatanna was written in this. And I liked the second half of it a lot, even though I got a little lost at the end. Like, I feel like I need to know more about Manhunter.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that. So when they figure out that Leviathan...
It's her Manhunter stick.
Something to do with her Manhunter stick. I don't know what that means. And I don't want to know what that means. It's not an invitation for people to tell me. I want the reveal to happen on the comic next issue. In a way that's exciting because I don't know what that means. So hopefully next issue they will tell me. I haven't figured it out yet. And what Talia has to do with it because... she was attacked by Leviathan, so it wouldn't make sense for her to also be Leviathan. But who knows? It's fun.
Well, we've only got one more to go.
I like it. I do like it.
I know you do. That's condescending.
Was right? Wonder Twins yours?
Yeah.
Your pick of the week. Wonder Twins.
I laughed out loud many times reading this book. I thought it was super whimsical. The principal had quote after quote after quote that was killing me. Second panel, aging is waking up every morning wondering if this is as good as you're going to get. Sadly taps on his iPad as he eats his food.
So this issue was drawn by guest artist Mike Norton, which was fun. At first, it took me about three pages. And I was like, this is not Stephen Byrne.
Byrne. Yeah.
Who is this? And I had to go back and go, oh, Norton.
The guards and the ice cream truck killed me, and they did it three separate times.
This issue sort of takes a break from the main story a little bit, and it sort of deals with aging and regret and all the things that you deal with as an adult. The main crux is that it's the class of 89's 30th high school reunion, which includes the principal. So there's a lot of stuff here about let's say being 48 and having a lot of regret.
Yeah,
which is inching ever closer.
Then there's a fully different sequence where, first of all, kids don't handle reunions. That's not a thing that happens, yeah, but whatever.
They don't let the kids at the school run the reunion, but that's fine. It was funny.
So Zaina wants to have this run, and she puts Zan in charge of the casino, and she's like, you need to take this seriously like an adult. And he slowly devolves into a figure from Casino. It was funny every time, and he had a mustache
and a blazer over his costume, and he was like running
who
it like
was the Yanni guy.
I don't know, just somebody from the reunion.
Okay, yeah, that's great.
It was funny, but I have to knock it for, as you mentioned to me, horrible use of the Yeti microphone. The microphone that Zane is using for her school announcements is the one I'm currently talking into, and I think Josh is as well.
Yes,
it does not work that way. And I've seen many people, mm-hmm. We used to have some at work in the conference rooms, and people would constantly do what she's doing, which is talking to the top of it, which is not where the bubble of sound is.
You're not wrong. The field, there's a word around it that I can't remember, but there's an actual technical term that I used to know because I have a degree. But the sound field, you don't point the Yeti microphone at your lips, basically.
It comes from around the
sides. No sound. Yeah. Also, it's not a wireless model. So that's another thing.
But it got me so angry. I was like, oh, she's talking the wrong part.
Well, the worst part about it is that he knew enough to put a Yeti microphone.
Right. Which means he's using it wrong.
Exactly. We have a friend who does another podcast, which I'm not going to name. Put a picture up of his setup. Nice blue Yeti there. Pointed right at his lips. And I was like, dude. I didn't tell him publicly. I went in privately. I was like, that's all wrong. Doing it all wrong. Because I care about sound quality. Also, you know,
yeah.
We're number one.
Anyway, it's just, you know, you got to knock it down half a point for that one. But the rest of it was great. All the casino night stuff was great as that evolved into disaster. And then it was like, was it a heist that was happening? Is that what was going on?
She escaped from prison.
Oh, that's right. The girl from, yeah.
Yeah, which would, by the way, also really good. I really like that plot of the girl who was trying to save her dad, but her dad got, you know, trapped by Lex and had to be a villain, and like how that's turning and how the relationship, like, that's all really good character and plotting work in addition to everything else, and her whole thing about how she broke out of prison. There was a ton in this issue. It was great.
Yeah, there was a lot going on.
Yeah, and it was handled really well.
My favorite part was the principal who was in love with the librarian in high school.
Yeah.
And didn't want to go to the reunion because she was going to be there. And he's convinced to go. You know, it doesn't go the way you think it's going to go, where they're going to reunite. She's like, yeah, it's too late. Thanks for the nice words.
Do you think it's too late? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do.
It's 30 years
all
ago.
Right. It was great. It was really funny. We do a lot of sponsorship. We talk a lot about products. I would say for the most part, almost the complete majority of the time, really like those things. So now I'm going to talk to you about my Eero router.
Mm.
I love my Eero router and beacon system.
I know
system.
You do. You talk about it.
Well, I do. I do. I talk about it in an unpaid capacity, just off the cuff. I say to my friends, hey, I got a good Wi-Fi network going on here. And it's true. So one of the reasons I was glad that this came in is that before I had what I had considered to be a nice wireless router. I did research. I looked around. I spent a little more money. I work from home. We do this show. I need a very strong connection. I need lots of bandwidth. I need all those things. And I wanted to make sure that I got the best one. Because what would happen would be, like, on hot days, for some reason, my wife, my router would need to be rebooted all the time.
Hot days, cold days, rainy days.
Yeah. So I was really excited to sort of replace that system and got my hands on this Eero system. And I literally have not had any of those problems again. And also, in addition, because of the beacons, these basically you just plug them into the wall in different places in your house, trying to spread it out so that you get the best sort of coverage. I think it's mesh, is what they're called. The network of everything that has made every room in my house, you know, including my basement, my garage, around the edges of the house, is the Wi-Fi just works everywhere, which is great because there is no cell signal where I live. Like, it's really bad. It's been reliable. It's stable. It updates itself. You know, you remember the old router, every once in a while, like, I wonder how my firmware is. And you're like, oh, it's 2 years out of date. I guess I should do this. It does it on its own. You can always check it on the phone, on the app on your phone. I've just been really happy with it. And it's been really stable. Like, I've had it for, I want to say 2 years now, maybe more. It's been doing really well. So I can recommend it for sure. Eero is the Wi-Fi that your home deserves. There is an all new Eero. It starts at just, are you ready for this? You've listened to this before and you've thought, maybe let me look into it. It starts at just $99 now. Eero blankets the whole home with fast, reliable Wi-Fi, eliminates poor coverage, dead spots, and buffering. Oh, that doleful buffering. You'll have consistently strong signal whenever you need it. I don't have cable. I don't have phones. It all comes through Wi-Fi. Like, I need it to work. It sets up in just minutes. It plugs right into your modem or your modem router box. You manage it from a very simple app, iOS or Android. The app lets you pause the Wi-Fi for dinner and get alerts if any device attempts to join the network. You can, if you were so inclined, you could shut it down on just your kid's device if you felt like being a jerk. You can do that. There's no more Netflix buffering in the master bedroom. Kids aren't going to complain that the Xbox doesn't get a signal. There's no more worrying that your security camera will be offline when you need it. It just works. Eero has fixed all of those things. And if you've got those issues, you can get yours fixed as soon as tomorrow. Because if you go to Eero.com/iFanboy, you enter the code iFanboy at checkout. Remember that $99 we told you about earlier? Just keep that in mind compared to what you're paying for a router. You're going to get free overnight shipping with the code iFanboy. That's Eero.com/iFanboy with the code iFanboy. Free overnight shipping for your Eero. You'll have it set up in minutes, and you'll be pretty happy too. So again, make sure you get to Eero.com/iFanboy and code iFanboy. And thank them very much for sponsoring the show.
The Amazing Spider-Man 31, I only want to mention because I don't know what's going on because I'm not reading Absolute Carnage. I've read nothing about Absolute Carnage. But I do love it when Otley's drawn this book, and I do love it when Green Goblin's involved, when it's Norman Osborn. And I know that's like the shocking thing to say as someone like Spider-Man, but they have such a deep to the 60s of Marvel connection and a deep, dark one that when it's used properly, when deployed correctly, Norman Osborn showing up is like a scalpel to Peter Parker's heart. Just showing up.
Totally.
I love those moments.
Right. And it's too bad that I have no idea what was going on in this issue and hate Cletus and don't care. And I was like, all right, Otley's back. Oh, I don't want to read this.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, I read it not knowing the larger story. It's mostly not involved with that, but it, also a lot.
See, I had just read the one before it, and I was like, all right, this is the stuff. The last issue was great, and this looks good, but I was completely, like, I was kind of bummed.
I think, are they implying that new villain is Harry?
I guess. They did seem to be implying that.
Yeah. Anyway, stupid Carnage stuff aside, which I don't care about, I liked the other stuff that was happening around it. And this appears to be, by the checklist, yes, the final tie-in issue. So next in 2 weeks, we get back to just Spider-Man.
Good.
Which is good.
Good.
Yeah.
Hey, do you remember the last time that we talked about Usagi Yojimbo? And I said, I know you didn't like those first three issues, but four was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Five was even better. Five was the second part of the story that started in four.
Okay.
And it was a real heartbreaker of a story and just, I mean, wonderful. I was like, oh, this is what I come to these issues for. Usually one or two issues and done, a story comes across somebody, something happens. It is not always a happy ending. It's a bummer. This one I thought was super strong.
How are you feeling about the color?
I mean, I kind of got used to it. I will say that one of the things about it, which, you know, could be seen as a feature, could be seen as a bug, is that Sakai's work is always pretty flat.
Mm-hmm.
And this tends to give the world a little more depth, which I think can work. It's almost not like one's better than the other. Black and white is better because it's what it was. It's what it was originally. But right. I don't think at this point it's taken a lot away from it either. If that's the thing that it takes to get more people to look at it, and I doubt that'll be the case, then I'm fine. But it's the same thing where, like, you know, all the bone stuff got put into color and then kids everywhere read it. So that's a bonus as far as I'm concerned, because a lot of people got to read that wonderful cartooning and that wonderful storytelling. But these two last issues, 4 and 5, were wonderful. Right. Great ending.
Maybe I'll go check them out then. So the great thing about not being all in the world of comics media as we used to be and not keeping up with all the news and not knowing what's coming is that I had no idea that the Batman's Grave was a thing. And I saw it on the shipping list, and I was like, what is this book? And I had to Google it, and I was like, Warren Ellis and Brian Hitch. Have they... I mean, they must have worked together since The Authority, but I can't think off the top of my head what that would be. They must have done something.
They did.
You think about it. This is the classic team from The Authority, which changed the face of comics in the early 2000s and with the way they, you know, the deconstructed widescreen storytelling. And they're back here with inks by Kevin Nolan, which adds a nice bit of depth and personality to Hitch's work, telling a 12-issue Batman miniseries called The Batman's Grave. Alfred is played by David Niven. And I'm not sure what the story is yet. There's a serial killer or some sort of weird killer while Alfred's having a lot of ennui about what Batman does. And if I could have any criticism, it would be that I thought his blowing up at Bruce about Batman just beats up poor people is something that many people online have leveled at Batman, but not something Alfred has ever said or I think would ever think.
Well, I mean... there's room for interpretation of sort of, you know, if this is like an Elseworlds thing and you want to take a different step on it, like who would be able to have that conversation with, with Batman, with Bruce Wayne? Alfred's the only person.
Yeah.
So I know what you're saying. Yeah, but I wasn't really sure what to make of it quite.
Alfred understands what's going on here. He's inside of it. So this is that's more of an outsider's perspective than an insider's perspective.
I
mean, that's a minor quibble. I did enjoy this, even though, you know, I'm not, again, not really sure what's happening. Because it is, I don't think I even realized it was 12 issues until this moment when I looked at the cover. I thought maybe this was like a short miniseries, knowing the history of this, the creative team.
That's a heck of a commitment.
Yeah. From both of them.
I know. And I kind of thought, what if you guys did something else with that time?
I thought this was maybe like 3 issues. You know, or 6 at the most, but 12. Woof. All right.
Well, I guess. It's funny because it didn't even seem all that quote unquote decompressed.
No, there's a lot. That's why, because there's a lot going on here.
And yeah.
There's a lot going on in Gotham. Why is there a lot going on in Gotham? I forgot. 911 is overwhelmed, so Batman intercepts a 911 call and goes to investigate, and it's a dead body, and he's been missing for a while. And I liked all that bit. I liked the investigative part. You know, we don't get a ton of Batman purely investigating crimes these days. So, you know, his holographic crime scene was cool, and getting in the head of the victim and the head of the criminal was cool, and well, that was all good. So I'm curious to see where this goes or what the point is.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
It's not a bad creative team.
No, it's a good one. And the Nolan inks add a little bit to the Hitch stuff, which at times can feel a little lifeless.
Yeah.
Not always, but at times.
When he draws on his own and inks himself, it can be a little rubbery.
Yeah.
And I think Nolan sort of tacks it down to sort of a more classic style.
So what you get sometimes with an inker like that, where you know, when Sienkiewicz would ink Norton, it was like that too, where you got, instead of just, you know, quote unquote tracing, you got a meshing of styles, which made it better. And I think this is what you get here.
Klaus Janson inked somebody last week. Either way, whenever Klaus Janson inks something, I get excited about that because he just makes it better.
Yep.
Yep. Same kind of deal here.
Those are the books we wanted to talk about. Go to patreon.com/ifanboy, and every patron there can vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, it was basically a tale of two books. It was The Batman's Grave and Dr. Doom, and they both sucked up all the air out of the room. There was hardly any votes or any other books. But Dr. Doom, number one, ended up winning, written by Christopher Cantwell, who's a TV writer on one of our favorite shows, Halt and Catch Fire. And art by Salvador LaRocca, who I cringed at first. But by the end of the issue, I think I was all right with it.
Yeah, it's a little better than I'm used to.
Well, the first scene is a newscaster's, and you get the LaRocca faces.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's almost all people in masks.
That was the thing about his Darth Vader series. They kind of worked because just masks, so it didn't matter.
Yeah, whenever somebody would show up, you get the LaRocca face. But whenever, you know, it's Dr. Doom and the guest star we're going to talk about in a second. It's mostly people in masks. He can't do the faces, so I was all right with it.
Yeah.
So this is a Dr. Doom miniseries that starts off all about climate change and how there's a plan to suck the carbon out of the air on the Earth and deposit it on the moon in this sort of toxic waste situation. And they're starting up the program. Dr. Doom is very much against it. He goes on the news. Joining us from Latveria, Dr. Doom, to say it's a bad idea. No one listens to him. He has his own camera team in Latveria, and I loved the guy who his audio guy. That was great. And then in the classic Star Trek 6 fashion, someone launches his missiles and blows up the whole facility before it can turn on, and so now he's being blamed for it, and there's certainly a tension here as everyone thinks Dr. Doom destroyed Earth's only hope of saving the planet.
I started off slow. Mm-hmm. I thought, I don't know if I like this. Because let's go back, because it reminded me. I was like, all right, Bendis was doing that great Dr. Doom mm-hmm. for a while as Iron Man, and I really dug that. In the Fantastic Four, he went back to just being Dr. Doom and evil. It's fine, but you know, it was kind of like I felt like we'd been somewhere and then we were ignoring it. And then our friend, Galactic Time Warlord Kang, shows up, and I said, oh, okay, you've got my attention here. But that, you know, that would soon get like, okay, yeah, it's funny, Kang showed up. We make a joke about it in the show, blah, blah, blah. But the nature of the conversation and how it happened
was great. Yeah.
It was like he didn't really know where he was coming from. Doom wasn't mad about it. Mm-mm. Like, they were trying to figure out if they were friends or enemies, and neither of them were sure. And then he just sort of blinks out and he's gone, you know, and Doom just accepts it. I like this sort of Doom behind the scenes, mm-hmm. you know. And then you get to the part, you know, the Star Trek 6 bit that you're talking about. That's really interesting. But what was more interesting was how Doom handled it.
Right.
And, like, immediately goes into action. He tells Victorious, you're going to be the new Regent. I'm going to have to surrender myself. Like, he understands everything that's about to happen. You know, he gets attacked. There's a fight.
Union Jack.
Yeah, yeah. And he basically turns himself in. And who's the other one? Paladin? No. Agent Zero. Yes, I can't remember what that's from, but it doesn't matter. But all this time he's having like this visions of an alternate life, which, you know, where he has a wife and kids and everything. Yeah, I found it very compelling.
I like the little moments. I really enjoyed the moment in the beginning where he's getting ready for bed and he puts some oils or creams onto bandages and wraps his face before bed.
Yeah.
I like that. It's a very little thing.
Yeah.
I like this. I like this a lot.
The big concept, it's Warren Ellis like, you know, and it's like we're going to open up a black hole on the far side of the moon and that's where we're going to put our pollution.
Yeah.
All right. That's a big space concept. I can take that. And they drew the black hole just like the one in Interstellar.
So
it's exactly the same.
I mean,
which is not a problem.
I like the Bendis story, but I'm a Doom traditionalist. I like Doom to be Doom. Mm-hmm. And when you say Doom being Doom, it's hard because he's not exactly Lex Luthor. But he's very similar in that he thinks he's the good guy in a way. You know, there's a lot of stories about him trying to take over the planet, not because he's a villainous tyrant, it's because he thinks he can do it better than everybody else. And, you know, there's a great Emperor Doom in old, it's one of the original OGNs that Marvel put out, in which he did finally take over the Earth and, you know, runs like a benevolent dictator. And it wasn't like he wanted to enslave everybody, he just wanted to be in charge.
And he's good at it.
Right. So there's a little bit of gray area with Doom, although I like him ultimately to be villainous. I think it is fun to see him as someone who understands politics, understands science and magic, and sees why things are going wrong, but no one listens to him because he's Dr. Doom, you know? That name is not going to engender you much
trust. That's not his fault.
So I like this a lot. I think this is great. I'm glad this was the pick. I mean, I was going to read it anyway, but I'm glad it was the pick. I'm glad we get to talk about it. I'm looking forward to reading more of it. Does it say how long it's going to be? Probably 6 issues. It doesn't say. They never tell you on the cover of the first issue because they want you to think it's ongoing. I'm sure it's 6 issues. I'm looking forward to more.
As am I.
Ratings?
Ratings. 4?
I think it's a very solid number. 4.
4.
4 out of 5.
4.
Sticking with it.
Yeah.
Yes, I am as well. I am as well. So that was the Patreon pick over patreon.com/ifanboy. You can go vote for the added book to the rundown, but if you give it the $5 or higher level, everybody who does that gets their own superpower live on the show. Sometimes with thought and prep, sometimes not thought and prep. It's all improv at the end of the day.
Sure.
So let's start it off and give our first power away.
Well, I'm guessing this isn't a Christian name, but Blast It or Stash It, which may be some sort of game show, but who knows? They're supporting the show, so I'll give it to them, whatever. And if Mom Stash It and Pop Blast It, you know, want to be part of this.
This is some kind of hippie name.
I'm just going to call this one Blast. That's I'm going to go.
Blast and Stash It and his sister Moonbeam.
Yeah. So if Blast has perfect planning, he can see how, or she, they, whatever, can see how long Everything is going to take in a given day. Have you ever try to make yourself? I know that you've had some problems with planning today.
I might be living it right now. Yes.
Will you ever take a day off and you think, okay, these are all the things I want to do? You got 8 things on that list. You can get about 3 of them done, for various reasons. Well, that's not a problem for Blast It or Stash It.
Right.
That's a perfect planning of not only how each thing will actually take in real time, but also the best order in which to do them, and also the ability to just know ahead of time, oh, this part's not going to get done.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even there. Like, this is the time that we have to do things in, given geographical and weather. All that stuff is just a known quantity and can be arranged like a Lego of your time. Just boom, boom, boom. It fits exactly that way. It's very useful and can be done for others. Hey, I got to do all this stuff on Friday. How do I? All right, here's what you're going to do.
Austin Riley knows why.
Why?
If you ask Austin a why question, Austin has the answer.
He's just a dad?
Just knows why. Why?
I get a lot of why questions.
But he would have the correct answer.
I will explain why, and then they will follow it up immediately with why. And I'm like, literally. Like, the last thing I said before you said why was why. So let me ask you this. Does Austin Riley's answer satisfy the person asking it?
Well, it depends on the person, but the answer is correct.
Okay. Are you suggesting that some of my answers aren't?
Maybe. I've not heard all your answers, but maybe you don't have all the answers, but you have to give an answer, whereas Austin does have the answer.
That'd be very useful. Like, it applies to anything?
Like, you could ask Austin, why are we here?
Wow. I don't think I want to know.
Exactly. So some of the questions are maybe too much, but he has the answers if you want to know the answers.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder if his judgment is very good or it just goes in one ear and out the other. He knows why, but it's not.
Well, he can answer why, but it's not like he knows everything at all times. It's like you ask him the question and then the answer will appear in his head.
Right. Right.
He's not walking around with the weight of the universe on his shoulders. He just knows the answer if someone were to ask the question.
Okay. That's probably helpful for one's own sanity.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Wilbur has automated package tracking in his head. Knows where it is, if it's coming, what happened.
What time it'll actually arrive.
Yeah. And if there's going to, like, oh, it says it's getting delivered today. It's not. Oh, why?
He's like, you can go out for lunch. It's not going to be here for like 4 hours.
That is a problem because it always comes to you like, you know what? I think I'm going to go get that burrito. It's a bad time. I don't get a lot of things delivered that need to be signed, but when I do it wrong.
You have a lot of logistic issues on your mind right now.
I do. I do. Listen, I'm not even trying to hide it right now. These are things that I think would be useful, not just for me, but for everyday, ordinary folks.
Mm-hmm.
For the jamoke on the street.
Matthew Glenn. Here's the thing about Matthew Glenn. I had a power for him when I was driving, and now I don't. So
I can help you remember the things that were on the tip of your tongue and then disappeared. Oh, I was going to say it, and he's like, abominable snowman. How did you know that, Matthew?
There you go. Perfect. So Josh saves the day with his third power. So Matthew Glenn knows what everyone was going to say but forgot.
God, that would help me with the kid who asks why all the time, too.
So there you go.
I'm not even exaggerating. Anyway.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go at the $5 higher level, get your own superpower, or you can just help the show out. We can reach our next stretch goal, which is the monthly non-comics media podcast, and also uploading all the full-length video shows and minis that are missing from our YouTube channel. We'll put them up there. That's the next stretch goal. If you want to get there, Patreon.com/iFanboy is the best way to help the show. We do appreciate it. It keeps the lights on. Also, the t-shirt store, ifanboy.threadless.com. You can get our 7 designs, ifanboy logo, Herm, Pick a Luke podcast, ratings, if one is Electro, GDAT, Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters. Those are all available at ifanboy.threadless.com and also on other items other than shirts as well. ifanboy.com/support. That's where you can help us out via PayPal directly. ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find links to buy the books from the Booksplode shows as well as a general Amazon link. We thank everyone who does that. Okay, so now we're introducing a new segment in the show called State of the X-Men with Ron Richards.
that assumes a consistency to the bit, as opposed to the one-off welcome back, what do you think moment that we're doing.
I just wish that the sound effects of the clacking keyboard was ready in time, and I'd like to apologize. That was on me.
So you may be hearing a third voice. That's our old co-host, iFanboy co-founder Ron Richards.
Hello.
Who left us many moons ago to go work at Marvel, but has come back through the power of many people asking.
Yes.
To find out what our former X-Men dork thinks about the current state of the X-Men.
Yeah, no. So with the event led by Jonathan Hickman and with art by Pepe Larraz and RB Silva on House of X Powers of 10, ever since July when it started, I've had many of the iFan base pinging me on social media asking me, what do you think? And so wanted to make sure that we had a moment to talk about it and to let you guys know what I think of the X-Men. And I should use this moment for me to say that this is my opinion. It doesn't reflect any official positioning by Marvel Entertainment or Marvel Comics. Any opinion within this podcast is my own. So there you go.
This is okay. So this is not official. This is, they allow you to have an opinion.
Right. Exactly. Wow. And part of it was also is that, like, I wanted to, it makes sense to wait until it's over. Like, we've had the
sure.
House of X Power of 10. So this way I'm not like advocating for you to go buy it or like promoting it or anything like that.
I was ready to bring you on after the first Powers of 10, the whatever the first, like, Moira's different now. I was like, bring him on.
What does this mean?
So I will do my best because I've had the benefit of talking to Hickman about this, and I've had the benefit of actually being in the room during a couple of the publishing creative retreats to hear them talk about it. So I do have some privileged information in terms of what Hickman's kind of direction is in the larger thing, but I really just want to stick to kind of what's going on, like what just happened with these 12 issues, and basically personally as an X-Men fan, what I think of them. Before I do that, though, what do you guys like them? Where I don't want. Am I walking into a hostile room?
Someone, Josh, has not been listening to the show.
Listen, I'm busy. No, I know, Connor. You like it. Josh hates it, right?
Yeah.
I think we're very similar. I am enjoying. We both really liked House of X a lot.
Yeah.
And Powers of X would tend to lose us, or Powers of 10.
Would you tend... can't have 10 and have it mean two different things.
But do you understand why it's that?
I do, but it's an X. Yeah. And so don't be like, no, if it's X this way.
It's a little, I'll be honest, it's a little precious clever on Jonathan's part.
But also, it's not indicated anywhere.
Yeah,
you know, if you're just reading a comic and you're not plugged in, you don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
Whenever we went into the future, that's when it would lose us. Powers of 10 was much more heady. Jonathan Hickman that Josh tends to not like as much. And I don't like as much, but less than Josh. But we both enjoyed House of X. We both really liked the art from RB Silva and Pepe Larraz.
RB Silva and Pepe Larraz, like both of them were channeling Eminem in their own personal ways that blew. And because when this got announced, I was like, great, Hickman on the X-Men. I'm excited. And I was like, oh, Pepe Larraz, RB Silva, like those, you know, like I'm somewhat stuck in the mindset of where we were when we started doing iFanboy 10 years ago. We're like, give me Frank Quitely, give me Stuart Eminem, give me these big names. And as this next generation of artists coming in, I will admit I was a little like not as enthused, but when I saw that first issue, I was like, oh man, they're spot on. This is good.
It was 15 years ago, Ron.
Jesus,
so just to give you our thoughts overall, then you can run with it, is that we liked it, and as a setup for the new paradigm of the X-Men, I thought it worked really well. I think Josh came around to that by the end. I think that's accurate.
I think that once I recognized it was not going to be its own story, which now in retrospect, duh. But once I recognized that sort of it was a setup, this is the new world, I kind of wanted to read a single story. But like it works like that. My concern is still that like they basically turned these guys into dictators in a way. And they've said to the rest of the world, yeah, we're not going to take your shit anymore. And since we...
No. I mean, now we're getting... I mean, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think what they did was what Xavier and Magneto and Moira, you know, where Xavier and Magneto ended up was that, you know, listen, we've been dreaming of coexistence and you keep telling... And it says it right there in Powers of 10, the issue that came out this week. You know, we've been hoping for coexistence and you keep killing us. So now we're done. All these cures and all these miracle drugs would have been a gift to you previously, but now there's a price, and the price is you have to acknowledge that this is our country, and you have to acknowledge that we are a sovereign nation, which I don't think is an unreasonable ask on their part.
No, and you're not wrong. No, I actually agree with that part, but I do think that it lends a sort of like, well, they don't really feel like superheroes anymore. They feel like the other, because we don't represent mutants. We are the humans. So I'm like, so then right. Makes all of us the bad guys.
And you're right, because I do think that the positioning, the status quo that Hickman laid out now is, and it says it also again in the book, it is positioning humans versus mutants. And why I think that is so compelling is because we know he said it in the book, they lose.
Right.
Like the Moira's lived through this, and every time they lose, and so they're trying to fight a battle that they know that, and we know they're going to lose, and they're selling a lie. And it's going to be really interesting over the next couple of years to see how they exist in whichever life this is, of more the sixth life now, or whatever life that we're in of Moira is now, of how they sell the lie, which I think is fascinating. If you can't tell by now, I loved it. I loved every minute of it. I think, going back to Connor, what you said about why you guys liked House of X versus Powers of Ten, I think House of X is Jonathan Hickman doing his best version of a Marvel comic book.
Yep.
And I think Powers of Ten is Marvel putting out the most acceptable version of a Jonathan Hickman comic book that they can, right? Yes, and that's the balance, and that's the yin and the yang there. And I think what he did was this, and it's funny because I've been involved in a lot of the marketing and such stuff like that. And as we talk about it, it's like trying to build this up as another moment in X-Men history that you had, like when it launched in 63, and then you had All New, All Different in 75, and then you had 91 with Jim Lee and Claremont, X-Men Blue and Gold that ushered in an era. Then you had Grant in 2001 that ushered in an era. This is the next era. And honestly, I think it's a little bit of a retcon with Moira. I get it. I think, I don't know if it's a retcon, but if it's just more of a playing with a piece that hasn't been played with before, and giving it a larger scope. But I think what's amazing is what Jonathan has reset the paradigm of X-Men within the Marvel Universe, and did it in a way where everything that's happened both matters and doesn't matter.
Right.
Right, which is genius, like, and that's the thing. It's like you have to, if you're gonna do like to do this right, to not piss off X-Men fans like me, you can't tell me that everything that happened doesn't matter, right?
Well, we have a T-shirt for that.
Exactly, but at the same time, you can't move forward unless you think that none of it matters. And he was able to figure out how to counterbalance those two ideas, and you know, and using Moira's reincarnation and the experiences that they have and all this sort of stuff. And like now at the end of the series, like I'm jazzed to see like how do the X-Men interact with the Avengers now? How do they interact with any other supervillains or any other heroes in the Marvel Universe? Because it's completely different. And I know there was a lot of, you know, consternation or a lot of kind of questioning the whole reincarnation bit of it. And are they clones? Are they themselves now or whatever? But like the fact that, you know, like it's almost a funny inside joke in that he took dying off the table. Dying doesn't matter anymore. Right. Which makes sense because Jean was the first one to erase a character death meaning anything in the Marvel Universe, right? When they brought back Jean in the 80s, right? So it all kind of I just love how he took all the little nuance of the X-Men universe over the past 50 years or whatever and turned it into this modern take now, which is it's not about hated and feared anymore. It's not the metaphor. It's not, you know, the teenager doesn't fit anymore. It's not that at all. I don't know what it is, because it's Hickman, but it's not that, which I'm okay with. I think it's time for something new.
That's the question. I think the thing that's interesting to me, and I think this actually is typified in Cyclops, actually. At one point in early on, like he was back in like not Krakoa, and he ran into the other superheroes, and he was kind of jovial and happy again. But then he goes back to Krakoa, and he's sort of the soldierly guy. Yeah. And I think it's interesting. I think it makes complete sense that he would have been radicalized, which is basically what happened.
Yeah.
He, you know, tried to go along with it, and after a while he said, screw this. Now, I don't think that was super fun for the character. I think that changed him a lot. It totally makes sense on paper. Everything that they said makes sense with them on paper, you know, is good. But Connor and I keep going to the fact that you feel like at some point somebody, probably Logan, seems like the most – it would be like – hey, are we really going to do it like this? As opposed to every single one of them just going, this is awesome. Let's have a giant party in Ewok Village. Because that's what happened.
That's what happened now. That's what happened at
now,
the end of the now. Now, that's what happened at the end of this book, and now with Dawn of X, and I don't want to get too promotion, but like with the X-Men and with the other books coming up, like I almost feel like what we just read was prologue.
Well, it is. Absolutely, it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but past is prologue, so
yeah.
Well, that was then. This is now.
When?
Now.
So it's a little weird that the X-Men are like a Krakoan sex cult now.
Yeah, I know.
it just they're coming off as very culty.
Yeah.
And it's just the sticking point is – it's not a huge sticking point because we do enjoy it – is that, as Josh said, no one was like, this is weird.
Yeah.
we've never been like this before, or it's weird that we're just going to reclone everybody every time they die. And I realize that's a comic book thing, but like, you know, there's no discussion do people want to be cloned again? Do they want to be brought back? Like, there's no choice matter.
And I think that's part of it. I think that now they get to play with that concept. And you cannot tell me, like, the moment I read that and the moment it got explained to me, and then the moment I read it, my first immediate thing is like, oh God, what happens when someone doesn't come back that wanted to? Or what happens when the database gets corrupted or erased or stolen? Like, there's so many stories that can come out of this. Like, there's enough fuel here to drive, I think, many years of stories, like, laid the groundwork for it. And, like, it's somewhat, it makes you ask a lot of questions. But if you ask me, that's what's exciting about it, is that I don't have any of those answers.
I think that for all the good work that's been done over the last however many years of the X-Men, I do think that they're in a better place now than they've been in a long time. I think they're more interesting. I had been reading Uncanny up until this point, and it was fine. You know, there was good work being done, but it was clearly in a treading water situation. But even then, you could probably put that label on the X-Men for the last 5 years.
Right.
I don't know that Marvel or anyone knew really what to do with them. At least this is a point of view and a different direction, and we'll see where it goes, because I don't know the last time I would say the X-Men were compelling.
Right.
Really compelling overall. And right now they're compelling.
Yeah. True. Exactly. And I agree. And as an X-Men fan, don't get me wrong, I was nervous. And when the first time I saw that Faye Xavier saying to me, my X-Men, as they're crawling out of the pods with the big helmet on his head. And by the way, Hickman's got a thing for
giant
people
helmets.
With helmets, giant helmets. Yeah, exactly.
We know. And it's not okay.
It's slightly disturbing. I'll agree with that.
It's weird.
But I got admittedly, as the X-Men fan, I got nervous because you know how much I care about this stuff and how much it means to me and all this sort of stuff. And I went into it with that kind of like, you know, what's he going to do to it? And the first Powers of 10, I was like, what the hell is this? But now, like, I see it. I get it. And I just can't wait for more.
So you're okay,
like,
with the X-Men Clone Saga?
I'm totally happy with the X-Men Clone Saga.
This is not your Cyclops. This is Clone Cyclops.
But that's the thing. It is my Cyclops.
No, he got blown up on that space station.
No, but that's the thing, is that it doesn't matter anymore. That's what's so genius, is that it's they are Homo superior and they have a different way of doing everything, including this, and not marrying themselves to the singular body. If the true, you know, like, Cerebro was meant to back up your essence and they're able to replicate the body, it brings up a lot of questions and a lot of like, what is right, what is wrong, and all this sort of stuff. But it doesn't seem as if, who knows, maybe a storyline is about the degradation of the clones, or for some reason they're not. But right now I'm sold on the fact that the Cyclops that came out of that pod is the Cyclops that was there before he blew up on that space
station. But younger and fitter.
Right. Yeah. That's what's great, is that you can come back however you want to at whatever point in your life you want to, which is pretty good.
Yeah. Hey, I've been overdoing a little bit on the ham lately. You mind taking me back, Chuck?
All right. Two final questions and we'll let you go.
Yes.
One, for people who aren't necessarily going to want to read all six issues like Josh, and quite frankly, I don't want to read a Marauders comic or whatever.
Yep.
Is there a main book? Is there an Uncanny? Is X-Men the main book?
I mean, that's a great question. The stock answer is that the sales and marketing answer is that they all read independently, but they're all telling a larger story. I do know that Jerry Duggan and Ben Percy and Teeny Howard, Brian Edward Hill and Hickman and Ed Brisson, the folks that are writing them, I don't know if you can hear crying babies in the background.
That's new.
Yeah, that's a new thing. All the people writing the books are writing together to tell a large story, kind of like the way the X-Men used to be, like in the 80s when X-Factor and New Mutants and Excalibur and stuff like that all existed on their own, but then all tied in together. So there will be references, from what I understand, to the other books, but like anything, read what you want.
X-Men is the book Hickman's writing, though.
X-Men is the book that Hickman's writing.
So I would assume if you could only read one, that would be the one.
Hickman's writing X-Men, and he's writing New Mutants.
Okay, so if you're going to only read one or two, those would be the ones to read, I think.
Well, I don't know because New Mutants is basically Sam and Bobby and the other New Mutants in space. Like, it's off-planet. Like, it has to do with Shi'ar and, like, it's all stuff like that. And so, like, New Mutants sounds really great, but I don't know how it ties into what's going on in the larger tapestry. You know, X-Men is mainly focused around Cyclops and the Summers family that live on the moon. You know, like, you know, Marauders, to me, of all the books that I'm the most excited about, Marauders and Excalibur are the most interesting, because Marauders is basically Kitty and a team on a pirate ship. You know, like, which is fascinating. And then Excalibur is making Betsy Braddock Captain Britain. And so, you know me, you know how much I love the whole Captain Britain concept. So I'm there for that story. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I would say try the first issue of all of them, like, and see what sticks, see what art you like, see whatever you don't like. And they're supposed to be telling one big tapestry, but then just read what you like.
Final question.
Yes.
Couldn't they have gotten something better than beer for that big party?
Wolverine likes beer.
Sure, but they all had beer.
Yeah, well, so, you know, so, you don't like a good beer?
I love a good beer.
That was Bright Tree Village, though, right?
It might have been.
You look at that page, and I'm seeing a little Disney crossover.
Yub Nub.
Oh, you can hear the song.
When the X-Wing flew by and lit the fireworks, I thought that was the giveaway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I miss you guys. I love the show. I hope you're having fun. Did you guys read Doctor Doom number one?
Yeah.
We talked about this very show, yes.
Oh, very good. Did you like it?
We did.
We're doing a show here.
We got to go.
So what was the patron pick?
That was the patron pick.
Oh, good job, patrons. Bravo. All right.
All right. So thanks, Ron. We have to go now.
Wait, hang on. I need to thank one person for making this happen. Who is it? Someone on Twitter. Corey wanted to know what I thought about the House of X Powers of 10 stuff, wanted me to come on the show, and I told him if he became a patron, I might consider it. So thanks to Corey and the efforts of other people, here I am, here I was. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to go back in my windowless office in the Marvel Entertainment office.
I thought you were going to thank a bunch of, like, random people in the Marvel production. Also, the Ed down in the mailroom, I got to thank him. He's been putting this out. The accounting assistant, Stu.
Really give it up for Jordan, because Jordan is really, I mean, working with Jonathan and doing all this stuff, Jordan White is doing a great job on the books, and his staff, they're doing wonderful.
Let's wrap this show up.
Bye. Love you.
Bye. We love you.
All right, so we did that instead of the email. So if you want to write us in, contact@fanboy.com. We had a lot of great emails this week. Sorry we couldn't get to them, but we knew we had this special segment to do. And let's tell them about the shows coming up, Josh.
Well, the shows that are already out are Booksplode, that Connor and I did, talking about Sleeper, book one, which was Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. Great book. Listen to that. Make sure, if you haven't read it, you're going to want to listen to it and then you're going to do the whole thing. We did a show on the Joker movie, mm-hmm. Joker, which Joker. Is what it is called. Joker. Myself, Joker.
Joker.
Myself, Connor, and Mike Romo.
Joker.
Talked about that movie, whether we thought it was good or should exist, or listen to it. I can't even tell you what I think, honestly. And then there's a Talksplode coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably this week. I never like to commit until I've recorded it. But between the time that you hear this and it goes up, I will have recorded it. And then you'll be like, oh, you talked about that person's work a lot. Let's listen to this. It'll be a good time. And then at the end of the month, you can look forward to listening to the Animation Brand Trust talk about Wonder Woman Bloodline, which will be the last week in October.
Head over to iFanboy.com. That's where you can find all those shows, including the Joker show. You can find all the podcasts, all the old shows. You can also find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking Facebook.com/iFanboy. Or following at iFanboy on Twitter, or follow at iFanboy Comics on Instagram, where you can find the Best of the Week in Panels feature as well. And individually, we are at CS Kilpatrick on Instagram and at J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram.
And if you like this, you can leave a review or ratings on Apple Podcasts or whatever other medium you do to rate podcasts, if that's a thing. Not just us. Do it for anybody, any show. Do it for everybody. Just give everybody a good review.
Go down the
or
list.
Or bad review.
Go down the line.
The podcast that you really enjoy, especially, you know, like some of those independent ones, you know, make sure people know about it. That's a really good way to do it. And the other really great way to do it, possibly even better, is to let people know, you know, on a one-on-one, word of mouth, tell people on social media, you know, tell people at the comic shop, do whatever, like, oh, I love this show. You know, that kind of thing really goes a long way, the personal testimony. So we thank everybody for our show. And honestly, just as a thing for sort of all the podcasts, I think that's a really great way to do things. That is it.
That's it. Thanks for Ron for coming back real quick to talk about the X-Men. That was fun. And thanks to you for listening. And as always, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. All the cities that we burned down. 2000-